Blog Talk Radio.
Matrix, 923, I'll give you a correct address, but you have a fire in a one-story, ordinary, looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. Get your traffic control, squad 5, England to 273, 273.
Good evening and welcome to Fire Engineering Talk Radio Show, Politics and Tactics. My name is Dave Polikoff and I'm with my host, Nick Papa. Frank Ritchie is on assignment doing stuff for his union, and tonight we have a special guest that I'm going to allow Nick introduce him. So take it away, Nick.
All right. It gives me great pleasure to introduce our guest tonight, Captain Bobby Ecker of the Camden, New Jersey Fire Department. And Bobby, why don't you introduce yourself?
How's everybody doing? Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. It's an honor. So my name is Bobby Eckert. I work in the city of Camden, New Jersey. I'm getting ready to start my 14th year there, and I've been a captain in February. It was about 3 years. I'm currently assigned to Engine 1, which is the busiest engine company, but it's a downtown engine company. So we're busy run-wise, but we're not busy. We're not the busiest fire-wise, unfortunately. So I've had a chance in my career in Camden to work kind of everywhere, and you know, it's been a lot of fun up to this so far, and I'm still having fun, and here I am. So, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
So, Bobby, you've been making your way around the teaching circuit quite a bit in the greater New Jersey area and now hitting up some pretty large conferences. So, I've noticed that your classes are targeted at largely engine company operations and new company officer development. So we're kind of going to base our show tonight just on those two topics and let the conversation organically go wherever it leads. And so just why don't you talk about both of those two classes, whichever one you want to start with first, and we'll go from there.
Okay, yeah. So I started about a year ago. It'll actually be a year tomorrow. I started on a joke, Ecker Fire Tactics. And so it was basically my frustration of – some of the information out there on the internet that I thought was just totally wrong. And from teaching at like a county level in the Fire One program, I just saw like a huge disconnect with the student and the material that was being taught. So I kind of, you know, started my own thing. But when I got hired in the fire department, my dad actually gave me a journal and he said, just journal. And he's like, you'll thank yourself. And I just, I journaled and it came to a point where I've mostly worked in the engine most of my career, although I've been assigned to a ladder company. I was assigned to a squad engine for 5 years, which was my best period so far in my career. And I just kind of put this class together. You know, some of my friends were like, you know, you should really get out there and do this. And I said, I don't know. I kind of curse a lot. And so it kind of just like organically came about. And so I got my urban engine playbook that I've been doing a lot lately. I have another class called Fire Ground Considerations, which is like building instruction, size up, some specific fire scenarios. I'm like obsessed with building instruction. I think the ignorance of building instruction will kill firemen, especially in the future, you know, with the new generation coming up. And then my experience of being a company officer, becoming a company officer, actually drove me to develop a class, actually two classes. I just did another one. You know, for the men, for the mission. And I have one from Jump Street to Front Street, like a transition to fireman to boss thing, because I really wish I prepared myself or there was a class to prepare myself for being a boss. Because in the Camden Fire Department, on a Monday, you're a fireman. On a Tuesday, you're a boss. There's really no transition. I know a lot of places are like that. Hopefully, you learned a lot along the way. And, yeah, you just kind of just have at it. So that's basically how I came to be doing this stuff.
So on that topic, as a new company officer, what were some of the lessons that you learned the hard way or some of the lessons that you wish you had been given ahead of time?
I really wish that I had more, I don't know how to put it, not like dealing with a company, like dealing with personalities, dealing with a dynamic of supervision, not fireground supervision, more of like firehouse and the everyday problems of the firehouse. I think as a company officer, I really feel that the fire is the easiest part of your job. And I don't know if you agree or disagree with me. I think it's all the other stuff that comes with it is really where you need to be better at. You know, I always say my head's in a vice because you're getting it from above and you're getting it from the bottom. Like, you want to take care of your guys, and sometimes you can, or sometimes you're put in a position where, you know, things aren't going your way. And then sometimes maybe fire administration puts a policy out that you totally disagree with. And, you know, I just oftentimes – in my first year there, I felt like I was in a vice and there was no way squeezing myself out of it, you know? So it's more just like dealing with the position, you know, coming into it and how to handle the everyday things. You know,
I want to kind of dovetail on what you're saying. I agree with you 100%. When I talk to, you know, new lieutenants and captains that come in, and I tell them the hardest thing that we do in the fire service is discipline, because we don't teach our officers how to discipline people. We don't teach, you know, we don't teach them how to deal with personal problems that come to work from their the guys and gals that work with them. We don't train our officers. It's almost like you got to be a psychologist in order to be able to deal with the things that come day to day from your people. Pulling lines and putting fires out is probably the easiest thing we do. Even though it's the most dangerous thing we do, it's the easiest thing to do. Dealing with personnel problems, I agree with you. We don't prepare our officers to take over the admin side of the officer. And we all know that fighting fire is 10% of our job. The rest of it is paperwork. And one of the things that I tell everybody is that, you know, this job wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't for all the people. We totally get ourselves kind of hemmed up with personal issues and problems, and we don't discipline correctly, and these problems continue. And then you hear everybody else like, how does that guy still have a job? Well, because there's never been any paperwork or formal charges filed on anybody. It just keeps going and going. And one guy, you know, will poison the shift, but you hit the nail on the head right there. Absolutely.
I think too, like, I was kind of blindsided with the fact, like, I'm very guilty, and, you know, maybe some people are listening are guilty of this too, and I actually just posted about it because I learned real quick you can never expect anybody to have the level of enthusiasm about this job that you do. So when you walk into a place thinking you're going to change the world as a company officer, you're going to find out real fast that you're not going to change the world at all. You know, you're going to be able to maybe handle your company and push them in the direction that you want them to go in, but, you know, conquering the world and sharing your enthusiasm, you got to take baby steps at it. It doesn't just happen like overnight when you walk into the job. So, you know, I love doing it. And, you know, I kind of had the idea what the responsibility was, and I take it very serious, but, you know, it definitely was a huge learning curve that first year. And I would all I want is people to learn from my mistakes, because, you know, I had some issues. I incur some disciplinary action myself from some of the decisions that I made that I wish maybe I did a little better. You know what I mean? So it's why I made the class up, just so people learn from my mistakes. That's all.
Yeah, I hear you. And that's the whole reason I got into this whole teaching thing to begin with too, was I had a couple of fires where I learned a lot of lessons the hard way, either things that I did or on the receiving end of. And that was my whole driver, is when you have the opportunity where you really take the experiences that you have and you're able to self-evaluate and really critically evaluate, you can really pick apart some great lessons. And that's where the true learning comes about. And if you think of all the best articles you've read, the best classes that you sat in on, it's exactly that. It's the instructors that share actual experiences where maybe things didn't go that well, and then they figured out how to correct it so it wouldn't happen again. So I think that's an awesome approach to how you teach, and I think that's where the true learning comes into play, instead of just regurgitating some, you know, some stuff out of a book or, you know, the same, you know, rudimentary, you know, firefighting tactical stuff, which is important. But I mean, the true learning comes from a lot of the lessons learned the hard way, at least in my opinion, anyways.
Yeah, I think a lot of the classes that you see offered at FDIC, there's a lot of great hands-on classes that, you know, carrying the hand line and tools and things like that. But if you're a firefighter that's looking to become an officer that's looking to improve themselves, you know, you got to look for those management classes. And, you know, it truly is an art form to be a good manager, be a good boss, and to be able to handle all the different personalities that are coming through. Not only the different personalities, but the different age ranges of people that are coming through and work ethics and things like that. And we truly don't prepare our officers for what is going to happen. And like you said, one day you're everybody's buddy. The next day you're the boss. You know, you're riding the back step to the front seat. And we just, in the fire service in general, we do a poor job preparing our guys and gals for that. And, you know, we do have officer candidate classes we put together. And, you know, you can only teach so much. You can't teach the every what-if situation. Some things you're just going to have to learn on the job. But, you know, putting people into the position of boss without ever having any type of management class is putting these guys behind the eight ball, especially when a problem does arise in the fire service, and if it's a serious enough problem, you know, whether it be a racial problem or some type of issue like an HR issue, and you don't handle it correctly, you know, there could be some pretty bad consequences.
And that's about the litigation, and, you know, it's a minimum what time do I'm 9, I think cell phone, however, you know, and, you know, being recorded, like, you know, in the phone, you know what people they're sleeve thinking about this stuff. All the people committing careers and dumb things. You can't be. You're like a great team at your house. Sure, the guys are doing, and, you know, young, full to bigger, they're bigger and. Their arm 7, so that caveat.
Hey, Bobby, you're breaking up.
Yeah, your cell phone's breaking up really bad. We only got every other word on that.
Hold on, let me. But now. All right, there you go. I can hear you better now.
I can reposition in my house. Okay.
All right, yeah, there you go. Yes, yeah, if you want to just
say,
repeat
say what you said again,
said.
Because it sounded like it was important stuff. Say what you said again.
No, 10 years ago, 19 now, and you know, 2009, I mean, I think I had a flip phone, you know, at a public room, people were, you think, and it can be used again. You know, people, their careers, because issues and things they just the whole different animal that into the company officer because I can you can be open very easily it's you know anybody aspiring to just the rules of the fire department no regulations of what things of that nature is that's just my opinion on that.
Yeah, no, Bobby, you're still having some connection issues. So if you can keep wandering around the house until you find that sweet spot. But yeah, just with today's day and age, I mean, you're never more than a few feet or out of earshot from a phone that has recording capabilities, and you just got to make sure that you know everything you do is on the up and up because. You know, your big brother's always watching. That definitely has added a new layer of complexity to being a supervisor. So, you know, you said you just got to make sure what you're doing is by the numbers, and you know, you're taking care of your people, but also you know you got to make sure that you're holding the line as well.
Nick,
better now.
You're a lieutenant in a single engine house, right, Nick?
No, I'm in a two-piece house with a deputy.
Okay, but now who do you have two officers that are riding, or is it just you that's riding the apparatus?
No, I'm the lieutenant in the engine company. I have there's also another lieutenant on the ladder company, and then the shift commander runs out of our house as well. The deputy chief.
Gotcha. Because we in our county we stopped the you know, where you just have a single, with the single engine house, you won't have a lieutenant in charge. There's always a captain there. Our dual service houses, we have the lieutenant and a captain. But, you know, back in the day, we would actually have, like, our technicians or our master firefighters could be in charge of a firehouse. Luckily, back then, the fire service was a different animal, you know, where the guys that were there truly wanted to be there for the love of the job. And so it was kind of it was easier to, you know, run a shift where it is today, you know, and you know, a buddy of mine, RJ, who is the president of Capital Fire, we were just having a discussion on motivation and, you know, how do you motivate people that are from a different age group or may not be able to be motivated. And again, it all falls back to we're just not training our company officers at a level of being able to deal with the personalities that are coming through. And again, fighting fire is easy. You know, that's an easy thing to do, but it's just all the other things that you can run into. And I think that, you know, my hat's off to you, Bobby, who's teaching these guys, you know, going from, you know, from the jump seat to the front seat and what they're going to run into and to try to cover some of the what-ifs and the mysteries of the actual admin side of the job. I applaud you for that.
So just to dovetail on, Bobby, what you said, one of the hardest parts is, I think Dave, you hit it. It's almost like you got to be have a major in psychology, a street major in psychology, because so much of being a company officer, being a supervisor, is being able to read your guys and understand the different dynamics of personalities. And like you said, not everybody is going to be Joe Fireman that's 100% into the job and that's listening to podcasts like this or, you know, taking traveling to take classes. The reality is there's some guys that are in it for the paycheck, or it's you know, they treat it just as a vocation. You know, that's they don't take any more out of it than that or put any more into it than that. And that's fine as long as those people are doing their jobs, of course. But you need to be able to understand how to work around those people. And so much of a company officer's success hinges on you getting to know your members on a personal level as well. That's why it's so important to break bread with your guys, to have conversations with them over coffee first, you know, the first thing in the morning or in the afternoon, and get to know them, you know what their personal situation is. And so that way, if somebody comes in a little off one day, well, maybe it's because they've got a newborn at home that's not sleeping, or you know, maybe it's that them and their significant other have been having some issues at home. You know, that'll explain why, you know, maybe the behaviors are a little bit different, or, you know, to understand how to motivate them. You know, if they're not big into the job, but they're big into the sports, we'll use some sports analogies to try and, you know, get them to relate or tie into your drill topic for the day. You know, that's been always the biggest thing. And yes, you may not get the hard charging crew every day that you work, where you can go out and, you know, whatever you throw at the guys, they're going to love it. I mean, it's, Like today, I've got a really great bunch of guys that I'm working with today that love to train, and I mean we were stretching lines up the back porch of a multifamily as the sun was starting to set, and these guys were eating it up. Whereas, you know, you may not get that the next shift you come into work. You may get some guys that, you know, are just, you know, there for the paycheck, and well, you know what, you take whatever win you can get for the day, and as long as you did some meaningful training and you know, they absorb something, well, then that's your small win for the day.
I couldn't agree more with you, Nick. And it's tough, you know, working with different crews in different situations of that, you know, and it's cool that you were able to do that today, but you're right, sometimes you don't. But, you know, it's funny, you talked about the kitchen. You know, when I first got promoted with the one captain, I said, he's like, you know, you can hang out in the kitchen for a little bit, but afterwards he's like, you know, go back to your office. He's like, give the guys a chance to bitch about you. It's healthy. And he's right. You know what I mean? Seriously, like, you know, get involved in a meal. Listen, I love cooking. Nobody cares about the meal more than I do. But, like, you know, after dinner, hang out for a little bit. But you know what? Let the guys have their time. Let them bitch about you. It's very healthy. Like, you know, when you're not with your wife, yeah, you complain about her. When she's not with you, she's going to complain about you. It's a healthy situation. And I think that's one of the things, you know, a lot of company officers maybe try a little too much to get up in there when it's like, yo, Cap, give us a little breathing room. Or, yo, you know what I mean? Like, let us have our space. So I think that goes a long way, too. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, there's a dichotomy to everything, and I think that's a really good point, because everybody needs their space at times, and you know, sometimes the guys, even if you have a good relationship with your crew, sometimes there's always a little bit of that that uptightness if when the boss is around. So that's a really good point to bring up, and making sure that you balance things out and you're not on top of your guys all the time.
But the one thing I do say is, you know, I think the hardest part about, to me, being a company officer, when I was a fireman, like, I could come into work and I could have a bad day, and, like, you know, I would just tell my boss, like, listen, I'm having a bad day, or I don't feel good, or whatever. I think the hardest part about being a company officer in a career fire department is you have to be the same person every day. You have to be the most consistent person every day, no matter what is going on in your entire life, because you have 2, 3, 4, 5 people depending on you to make sure that you're calling the shots, doing the right thing. And I think that's, to me, that is the hardest part about being a company officer, is consistency every single solitary day. It's very hard. I struggle with it. I really do. I don't know about, you know, you guys, your opinion on it, but that's just, you know, how I feel.
Yeah, I think that, you know, my days, you know, of riding the fire engines at work are over, you know, being in the battalion car. But being able to be in the station, you know, where my office is, I'm out there not every shift, but probably at least maybe twice or three times a month. I'll sit down at the table with them while they do their lineup. And I try to stress that the lineup is probably one of the most important things that we do in the firehouse. You know, the captain, the company officer gets to lay his eyes on everybody, you know, kind of, you know, get a good visual picture of what your people, you know, what are they bringing to the table today? Did somebody look sick? Did they look tired? Or you know, something going on? And then you get to let them know that this is what the plan is for the day. And I like sitting in on their lineups, and I don't say anything. I don't try to dominate, or, you know, I'll sit in the corner and just hear what they have to say. You know, but you're right. There are some stations that have day workers that are all day workers, and they're seeing a battalion chief every single day. And when I'm working, I try to give those guys a break and maybe only see the day workers like once every pay period, to try to give them a break from seeing the chief face to face, because everybody needs their space. And like I said, talk behind your back, and so they can get that out, you know, get that out, and be able to you know, be free with what they say without having to fear repercussions at the chiefs of the firehouse. But you know, having a good working relationship and being able to lay eyes on the guys and just do some coffee table talk is to me is still keeps me connected to the guys that are on the shift, and you know, kind of see what their frame of mind is, and you know, like I said, I just think it's one of the more important things of the day.
Sure, I couldn't agree more. Get a feel for the troops. 100%.
So, Bobby, what are some of the other lessons major lessons that you stress in your jump seat to front seat program?
I think the biggest one is be in it for the right reasons. Like, I know everybody, you know, it seems to me everybody's, like, in a big race to be a company officer. And, you know, I'm young. I just turned 36 in January. I'll admit that I'm a young man, but I've been a career fireman since I've been 19 years old, so I've been doing the job a long time, and you know, it was the next transition in my career, and, you know, I did a hard 10 years as a fireman in the Canton Fire Department before I got promoted, and, you know, people seem to want to get there fast, and, you know, did you pay your dues to get to the position? You know, do you feel comfortable? Because, you know, and as you know, as a company officer, Nick, you know, when you're riding in that right front seat and something goes wrong, everybody looks at you, even if it's something stupid, even if you don't know where you're going or something wrong with the apparatus or whatever. Like, you better be ready to answer these questions and be ready to go. And I just want to make sure, like, I always want to stress that people are in it for the right reason, because some people can't even fathom the responsibility that it really is being a company officer. But then again, some people aren't in it for the right reason and don't realize the responsibility while they're sitting in the seat. So, you know, it's like a catch 22 situation. And, you know, I don't think even, you know, coming up in the job, I kind of always knew the role of the company officer, but I didn't really realize it until I had my first fire, what you really do. I mean, you're a supervisor, you're not a worker. You learn that real fast. You know what I mean? Especially if you got guys that want to work, they're not going to let you work. These young kids I work with, they're good kids. They won't let me do anything. They're annoying. I kind of just stand there, you know? I'm like, come on, man, let me do something. They're like, no way. I'm like, and good for them, because I wouldn't let a captain work either. You know, it's just it's them little things. It's them little things that you kind of got to get a, like get all the bits and pieces and put them together. You know, and the little things always go a long way. I'm sure your mom told you that when you were a little kid, and it works in the fire service. It's funny how most life lessons when you're a child work in the fire service, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. It all goes back to the little life lessons that your parents taught you as a kid. You know, just common sense and doing the right thing. And that's really what a large portion of the job boils down to.
Well, and you know, sometimes the hardest thing, I think the hardest job is as the company officer is doing the right thing, because the right thing might not always be popular. Might not always be popular with the chief. Might not always be popular with the men, but sometimes you got to do the right thing. You know, everybody wants to be first due to a working fire, whether you're in the engine and truck or whatever. But like, you know, if you're second, third due, and you don't have a glamour position at this fire, but it still needs to be done, like securing utilities or, you know, checking an exposure or whatever, grabbing a secondary water supply and standing there, it needs to be done. And, you know, I always say the best firemen I know are the most well-rounded firemen, because they always ride their position. And somebody who rides their position to me is awesome. And as a company officer, you got to ride your position as well. And when I talk about position, I mean your assignment on the fire ground. Like, you can't just mull over the second due company because, you know, you're more aggressive or whatever. You know, the chief has a plan. Am I right, chief? You got a plan, and you're trying to enact it. And when stuff starts getting goofy because you're not doing the right thing, then the chief's messed up, then the fire's messed up, and it's a whole situation. So, you know, if your third due and the second due company is not doing well, trust me, the opportunity will present itself where you can rectify the situation, but you still got to ride your position and do the right thing. So that's my opinion on
absolutely.
That also.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't get to go in as much as I used to. Believe me, it pains me, but, you know, it was part of the job. But the one thing I can always say, you know, when you talked about, you know, the guys won't let the captain work, you know, I get up, if I get a chance and I take an interior position or I'm assigned an interior position, I always have my axe and hook with me, and I think I've loaned it out more than I've actually got to use it on the fire floor. But, you know, just so you know, you're in the captain's position now. You know that you never let the captain work when you were a firefighter. Now they're not letting you work. So just remember that. So you know what? Maybe he does want to work a little bit. Let the captain work.
It makes me happy when they say that, because I know they're good kids and they want to do
right.
the right thing. And you know,
and
it makes you happy because, well, it's that, and they respect the job as well. It's more about, I'd rather have the job respected than me respected, because the next generation, I care about the fire department when I leave there, you know what I mean? And, you know, I want to make sure that the next generation is doing the right thing. And they definitely are, for the majority of it. You know,
right.
A lot of people give the millennials a hard time. I do. I break their balls a lot, but you know, a lot of these kids are good kids. They just need to be showed the right way. That's all. And a lot of people got to take time. You got to take the little extra step to show them the right way. They didn't learn the way we learned. You got to find a way they learn and show it to them. So
It's funny you say that, because I literally just took a class because we have to recertify for our state instructor certification, and we did have a class talking about, you know, the millennials and things like that, and how they learn differently, and what their values are way different than ours. You know, I started when I was 18 back in the mid 80s, and when, you know, I had Vietnam veterans that were my officers, so they just said, you're going to do this, and I'm like, okay, and that's what you did. You know, now it's like, okay, you know, we're going to be pulling a line to the second floor, you know, or when you're in the training academy, you know, we're going to get this line, we're going to take the second floor. They want to know why. And it's not a disrespect thing. They want to know what the end is, from where it starts to when you're going to do it. And then when we get done, what's the payoff at the end? Why are we doing this? And if you actually take the time to actually explain to them why we do what we do, teach them about the fire service, teach them about the history. They absorb it and they take it, and you know, their work ethic is different than what yours is. But once they have the this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it, they'll follow you to the end of the earth. And you just have to learn how they think. They think differently than you do. It's not that they don't like the job; it's just that younger people think differently than the older guys do. And you know, we are the older guys now.
It's weird that that's true, but yeah, I think getting on their levels is important too. You know, we just graduated a class of six firefighters the other day, and I've had the distinction of being assigned to fire headquarters. And you want to talk about chiefs it's like Office Space with TPS reports. There's chiefs everywhere. So, you know, I had the chance to, you know, get in on some of their training, and, you know, I always took the opportunity to sit and talk with them because, you know, it's good to just hear their stories and, you know, get on their level and see where they're coming from. You know, you got to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. And because, you know, if you don't, then you totally forgot where you come from, and you should just go be a police officer or something, because, you know, the fire service isn't for you. You know, I was a 14-year-old kid that asked a million questions and looked up to everything and always wanted to learn. And, you know, maybe I was probably annoying to the senior guy. I was probably definitely annoying to the senior guy. But, I mean, I think that's just a cycle, you know?
But I'm sure every generation bitched about the next generation that was coming in after them. I'm sure everyone had their own little nuances. I'm sure, you know, the baby boomers bitched about the Gen Xers, the Gen Xers bitched about the Gen Ys, and now here we are bitching about the millennials. It's just a cyclical pattern of everything, and it's the thing is, you just got to remember, just like you said, Bobby, it's getting down in their level, figuring out, you know, what drives them, how does their brain work. Because guess what? You as the company officer, it doesn't matter, you know, the set of circumstances, you still have to deliver. You still have to train your guys. You still have to accomplish the mission. Because your next supervisor doesn't care that, well, these millennials don't X, Y, and Z. Well, that's great. Well, you have to figure out a way around that, okay, because that's your job. So you need to figure out whatever strategy you can come up with based on, you know, the individual that you were given, figure out what makes them tick and figure out how you can best accomplish the mission and get them, maybe not be motivated to the level that you are, but get them at least motivated to do their job and do it well.
I mean, 100% too. And if they're getting assigned to you, they're your guy, they're your company, your men make or break you. So you got to treat them the best possible way that they need to be treated. And, you know, you just got to figure out a way, you know, you got a younger kid and he's, you know, you guys are speaking two totally different languages about life. You got to figure out a way to find a connection because he's in your company and he's a reflection of you and vice versa. You're a reflection of him. So you got to find a way to make it work. You do.
Yeah.
And it's easier than people make it out to be. Some people make it a little bit harder than it really is, but you know, like you said before, Nick, just, you know, getting on their level and hanging out with them. And, we always sit on the apparatus floor, maybe smoke a cigar and hang out. And, you know, that's where we learn the most about each other. A lot of jokes, a lot of stories, a lot of laughing. And it's all personal stuff, and it's funny. You know what I mean?
Right.
Then we'll throw in a fire story or two that's kind of funny, and everybody's laughing, and it's a good time. And that's how you connect. You know, we break down the barrier of the tough guy thing. So.
Yeah. And it's amazing. You put a little bit of skin in the game, and you know, get to know people on a personal level as well. Because guess what? A large part of our job is personal and social. We live together for, you know, half a day, a whole day at least at a clip. Sleep in the same room together. I mean, we go through traumatic experiences together. I mean, a lot of times, in some regards, you know, we have, you know, relationships that rival that of the relationship with your significant other, because the amount of time that you spend with each other, the level of conversation that you have with each other, and the experiences that you go through. So you need to put some skin in the game. You have to invest in your people. Take the time to get to know them. You know what their learning styles are. You know what their background is. What are they coming to the table with? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? And that's where you lean on and empower their strengths and bolster their weaknesses. And that's where you really start driving the ball forward of developing your crew and becoming a cohesive unit. And that's where if you have guys that other guys in your crew that have strengths where maybe the other guy has a weakness. Well, now you tap into that other guy, so now he's kind of mentoring or bringing up that other guy, so now you're empowering him, and now you're teaching the other guy as well. So I think that if you can hit those, two birds with one stone type situations, that's where you really start making momentum as a company officer, is really when you're able to empower your senior men or maybe your more senior backstep guys to really help in that mentoring and training aspect. They're now buying into the company more. They've got some more skin in the game, and now it has that ripple effect throughout the whole company.
I agree, man. And again, it goes back to training. And I think that one of the most satisfying things as a company officer is when you do have that work and fire, and your company operates like that well-oiled machine. I mean, maybe there's some small hiccup that isn't their fault or whatever, because no fire goes smooth. But when it all comes together. It's like the A-team. I love when a plan comes together and, you do feel really satisfied. And, your guys do too, because, when the chief says good job and you can relay that to your guys, it's a good feeling. And, I remember the first time I was able to relay that to my guys, I could see it in their face. And every guy, when I came promoted, they all had more time on the job than me. And, they gave me a hard time. They still give me a hard time breaking my balls, but, as a joke. But, they being able to relay that to them was very, very satisfying to me. And I know it was satisfying to them because I could see it in their face, So it's the little things, man. It really is. But, like you said, with these young guys, whatever, in the Camden Fire Department, I could tell you 3 days during the week where separate groups of guys are out having an adult beverage. I always, not every week because my wife will kill me, but I try to make it, once or twice a month out there to be visible, to see these guys. You're on their level, buy them a drink or whatever. It goes a long way. It really does go a long way getting on their level.
Well, that's awesome. I think we hit on some really great points there. So now I want to kind of shift gears a little bit. We'll kind of stay in the same realm here, though. So as a new company officer, since you've spent a lot of most of your time on an engine company, so what do you think as a company officer, what are some of the most important points or the areas that are most important to a company officer in charge of an engine company?
I think, first and foremost is train your company to be self-sufficient. You don't rely on anybody because you can't. And as much as you want to, even if you're my best friend works in my neighboring engine. He's my best friend. But sometimes I can't rely on him because, maybe his driver made a wrong turn or maybe this, that, and the other. So it's nothing personal. I just got to make sure that my company is self-sufficient and I can only rely on them. And, we don't worry about anybody else. And maybe we don't need a ladder company. Maybe we don't need another engine. There's a video I always show in my engine class. It's Engine 25 in Philadelphia. And for anybody listening who doesn't know the Philadelphia Fire Department, they're an extremely, extremely, extremely aggressive fire department with a storied history of just aggressive fire fighting, and they get water on fire fast. And it's Engine 25 in Kensington, and they roll up on one. It's Sky Fox. They're live. And the best part of the video is the first 30 seconds because these guys, they get their own water supply. They get the line off as a company. They get the door open without a truck company. And they get water on that fire fast. And it's just – I show it all the time because – and I'm not one to show somebody else's fire videos, but I only show it because it's, the continuity of the company. They're working like a well-oiled machine. They're working like a well-oiled machine. And, that's training. That is training right there. That is a company officer taking stock in his training. And then when I show the video, I always get the response, well, they're a career fireman. And then I chuckle because I'm a career fireman who can only go to my firehouse 2 days a week. A volunteer fireman has access to his equipment 7 days a week. So I don't ever like to hear that argument when I show the video. It's just all about taking stock in the mission and the men and putting it first and making sure that you don't depend on anybody at all. That's the number one thing about being an engine company officer. You don't depend on anybody.
Yeah, the training aspect is absolutely one of the biggest and most important part of the company officer's role. And to be honest with you, it's the one that is the most taxing as far as the burden of delivering good quality training. And to go back on what you said, a consistent basis, because like you said, there's days that you come in and you may not be feeling 100% for whether it's things at home, maybe you're just feeling a little under the weather that day, but guess what? Your guys don't care. Not in a callous way, but they're expecting you to perform and to deliver good quality training to them because you showed up to work that day. So
yep.
You say every day you show up to work, you have to perform and you have to meet the expectations. Just as you laid out expectations as a new company officer for your crew, they have expectations for you as well. And they're probably even higher for the ones that you have for them, because they're expecting you to direct them and always in the right place, and to always have the answers and to take care of them. One of the biggest parts of that is making sure that they're trained and that they're prepared for whatever they may face out in the field. And that is such an unbelievable responsibility. What I feel is the most difficult is keeping the training fresh and keeping it entertaining for the guys, but at the same token, making it still practical, because you can whip out all the bells and whistles and the high speed stuff all you want, but it has to be appropriate for the environment that you work in, the resources that you have, and practical for what you're likely to face out in the field.
I agree with you 100%, Nick, and that, if you're an engine, train an engine stuff, a lot of people, they get wild with their training. It's crazy. I mean, I work a 24-hour shift, and, people, when I lecture, people, they always ask me how many hours I train. I bet you I don't even train an hour on the street. Well, number one's the answer. You know what I mean? I'm there for 24 hours. We have things to do, but I train for maybe a little over an hour at the most, but I keep it so realistic to what we're doing. That's all I need to do, because on top of that, we got to eat. We got to, maybe do something, community service, or, we have runs. We're the busiest engine. So, I try to keep it realistic to what we do as an engine company. I think maybe once a month I'll mix in something else, but, it's keeping it realistic to what you do every day, what your company is. So if you're a ladder company, ladder stuff, engine, rescue, whatever. And I think people, they over-engineer their training a lot. And I see a lot of it on the internet. It's wild. Some of the stuff I see, I kind of laugh, because I'm like, I can't believe you're wasting your time doing this stuff that you're never going to use in your entire life. And, I think the one thing I focus on, especially my young firefighters, is building their confidence. I think if I can build their confidence in training, the rest I can show them along the way. And the drills I do all the time is I like to black my guys' face piece out with their hood and put their gloves on. I like to make them make hose connections or mess around with their FCBA and stuff like that. And I don't do it to mess with them. I do it to build their confidence, because they're just heightening their senses that's how they're going to operate anyway in an ideal-age environment. So why not build their confidence in that way? And it's kind of funny, because I sit there and watch them, and I'll mess with them a little bit, and I'll hang out and smoke my cigar while they're doing it. But, it's a confidence builder. And then, don't be afraid to, as the company officer, to do it with them. Throw your mask on, throw your hood on, and show them that you can do it too. Make sure you're on their level at all times. I just think that's how you gain respect also.
I agree with that. when you're talking about, the training that you're going to do, train on the things that you're going to do 90% of the time, and that other 10%, the things that may happen once or twice a career, you shouldn't block out an entire month devoted to that type of training for something that just probably is not going to happen, where you are going to, as an engine company, you're going to pull a hose line every day. You're going to make that long hose stretch every day. Make sure the guys are proficient at putting that hose in their hand, running that long line, getting it in kink-free, getting the water to, and, to the nozzle and moving forward. Those are the things that you do every single day, and those are your bread and butter skills. Be proficient at that, because that is going to play a major role on the fire ground, especially when something you had said earlier, but you can't rely on the second or the third due engine company. You have to rely on your guys doing the job, and also that your guys are good enough to be able to pick up the slack in case another company falls down, to be able to move forward to get the job done. So
sure.
I agree with you. These guys that are practicing on these things that just not going to happen in your career, or once a career thing, you shouldn't have to devote an enormous amount of time on those skills that just may never happen. And so I agree with you on that. Just keep with the bread and butter skills, the stuff we do every day. Be proficient at that, and your job's going to go pretty smooth. Fire ground will move pretty smooth.
Sure. It's very true. And, being a fireman, I remember like not noticing that the whole plan came together. I kind of, not to sound like a dick, but I kind of just didn't care because I was riding my position and I knew my position got done. But as a company officer, you got to make sure all, however your riding assignments are set up, you got to make sure all them riding assignments are getting complete. And the unfortunate part about it as a company officer, and I think that's what makes the fire service so unique, is you're a supervisor of people that sometimes you don't physically or visually supervise them. You have to train them to operate alone and hope that they're doing their job properly. And you're going to find out real fast that they're not when the whole situation comes together. And I think that's unique to this profession that you think about it. You might have a guy operating in the rear from your rig or whatever, and you might be in radio contact with him, maybe, but hopefully you train him to do the right thing, and you're going to know right away if it happened or not.
And part of the way you find that out is just like we have, after action reviews or, debriefs after a fire, you should be debriefing your drills to some degree as well, too. To talk about the evolution that we just did, stretching up the back porch of the multifamily just this afternoon. We did, two quick stretches. That was the focus of the drill. And then afterwards, after each evolution, we all came back together. We talked about, what went well, what didn't go well. Where there was actually one little slip up on my part, which actually was a great learning experience, because now, it kind of slowed up the stretch a little bit and caused a little bit of an issue. But it was great because we were able to talk about it, diagnose it, say, hey, this is why so-and-so happened, so don't do this. Make sure that you go around the other side and do it this way. And then you can hear from everybody's perspective of how they did things and what worked and what didn't. So now everybody's kind of understanding the different roles, and now it's a good way to understand the perspective from each one and a way for you to check in to see if everybody is really grasping the concept of their jobs and able to do it to the level that it's supposed to be done. And it's so important that the drills that remain small scoped and focused, because just like how Bobby, you said that the drills get crazy with, the drills get crazy with the topics. They also get crazy with how broad focused they are, and that they're trying to cover a million different things, and they wind up being these complex, hour or two long drills where you covered so much that it's like information saturation. They're only such a small percentage seeped in, instead of just reinforcing the same few points in different ways where it really is able to sink into the guys, and you're making those points in different ways over and over again. So when you start getting crazy with how many different things you're trying to cover, I think that almost becomes just as much of a detriment, because now you're just overwhelming the guys, and now this is where you're going to start to lose the interest, because you're just trying to do so much at once that you lose the guys, where instead of doing those small chunks and just hitting one specific objective, really fortifying those points, you're just end up you're spinning your wheels, and you're losing the guys, and now they're starting to have that negative association with drilling.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's you don't have to do it right after the drill either, like, because some guys want to be done with it. We kind of train in the morning, and I usually like to talk about things at lunchtime too, or over the meal, and you can really strike up a really good conversation in the kitchen, just about what you did. But like, I agree with you, Nick. It's one of the, I love being a fireman for so many reasons, but one of the cool things about it, I learn something new every day, even when I'm training. Like, I'm going to do this better. I'm going to stand over here better. I'm going to grab the line this way because he I know that he's my nozzleman, and he does it this way because he does it different than this guy. And it's just, you're always learning something different every day. And I just think it's so cool. And it's what makes you better and more cohesive as a unit. And, again, I think that's very, it's fire service way. And I like it about it.
Absolutely. And just building those repetitions in, and when you're staying focused on one specific task or objective, the more repetitions the better off you're going to be, because that's where you start to develop that habit and really start to hone those skills. And then with each repetition, you get more and more comfortability, And as the comfortability increases, now they can start to really fine-tune, you know, the body mechanics, or start to increase their level of awareness. So now they're starting to pick up on the more the subtleties, and they're able to increase their proficiency that much more. And you know, that's where you can really have those conversations and keep advancing things and honing in on those details. Because if you know, guys love the one thing I always like to relate it to is sports. Because if it's one thing that a lot of firemen love, it's sports. So even the guys that aren't 100% into the job, there's a pretty damn good chance that they're going to be avid sports fans. And if you just relate the drilling to sports, you look at a professional athlete. Let's take baseball for example. You just got to equate the drilling to the practicing that the professional athletes do. And if there's anybody that understands, you know, the importance of drilling and practicing, it's high-level athletes. You take a baseball player, for example. The infielders are going to be taking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ground balls. The outfielders are going to be taking, you know, pop slides. The batting practice of, you know, just taking hits over and over and over again. And it's their practices and their drills aren't these complex, grandiose things. It is just simply going over the basic movements, the basic body mechanics, and the actions that they're most probable to do during a game, and just constantly refining them through repetition. And that's why they're so good. It's like you talk about that Philly Engine Company. Those guys were able to perform at that level because they just hammered the basics over and over again. It's just stretching lines ad nauseum, and they developed that cohesiveness and that's the ability to operate cohesively as a unit. Where I'm sure, like, even their level of communication was probably so minimal because everybody did their job, and that's the only way you get that is through drilling.
You're 100% right, and like you said, baseball. I mean, professional baseball players that make $300 million a year, $330 million a year, like Bryce Harper.
They do the same thing.
They do the same thing they do in Little League, and that's, you know, firefighting is fire one. You do the same thing, and you know, you just refine it. You know, no two fires are the same, and you know, obviously conditions are going to dictate your action on the fire ground, but 97% of your actions on the fire ground are going to be tasks that you learned in fire one and you honed on the street with experience and training. And, you know, it all falls back to the basics every single solitary day. And, you know, as a company officer, you got to take the basics and grow on them and build your knowledge and, you know, build your knowledge of building instruction, build your knowledge of size up, try to get as much experience as you can, because, you know, you're going to be calling the shot. You're going to be saying where the line goes. You're going to be saying where this goes, that goes, whatever. And, you know, when the bed gets shit, it's on you. It's on you. It's on nobody else. And you got to own it too. You got to own it. You have to. It's just how it is.
And I think you hit on one of the other salient points of that for the new company officer to learn. And it's manning up. And when a mistake is made, whether you made it or not, it's your fault and you own it, because whatever happened, it happened to your crew on your watch, and it's you're responsible for it. So you gotta take the screw ups on the chin for the guys. Like I said, whether it's your fault or not, though, you always got to take the heat for it, and you always got to pass the accolades, and whenever you get the wins, you pass that down the line, and your wins are from go to your guys, and you take the hit, you take the lumps. That's one of the biggest things is. No matter what happens, you just got to own the mistakes, take it as a learning experience, and, you know, just take whatever measures that need to be taken to make sure that mistake doesn't happen again. That's
100%.
That is definitely.
I agree. Yeah. It's, you know, my father's 81. He's been in the fire service since 1959. And he always tells me, he's like, you know, everybody's got to burn one down. He's right. Everybody's got to make the mistake, man, or you're not going to learn. You got to make one parking lot in your career, or you're not a farm.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, we can't plan for every contingency or every situation that may come up on the fire ground.
You could have your crew like a well-oiled machine, and the fire of your life is on the windiest day of the year, and it's out of your hands. You know what I mean?
Right.
it's out of your hands. Things aren't going to go your way just because Mother Nature says so, you know? So it is what it is. Remember, it's Murphy's Law. Murphy's got his drunk brother with him all the time, every time.
That's right. Yeah, there's sometimes you're just going to get dealt a shitty hand, and it's going to be a loser out of the gates, or the conditions are just not going to be conducive to you coming out with a W on that one, and it's just going to be how well are you able to adapt and overcome, to make sure it doesn't get any worse than, how it's been presented to you.
But
and
you
I think
know,
that's
and
what makes the difference of a good company officer and a great one.
And I think in the engine, the engine mostly, you got to remember the main reason you're there, to put water on the fire. Get water on that fire in the most aggressive way possible, and, your problems are going to go away. Your problems are going to go away, and, you're going to stabilize the incident and conserve the property, and hopefully, you mitigated the life safety situation, and your problems go away. I think people pull up, try to over-engineer things, maybe lose their minds a little bit, and things start getting weird. You're there to outflank the fire and stop it from rapidly exposing, going to exposure, whether that's interior or exterior. If it's going to the second floor from an interior or the second house from the exterior. Your job is to stop it. That is your job. That's it. You're the engine officer. You're not there for anything else. Don't worry about anybody else. Worry about that.
And the good thing about a company that trains a lot on their bread and butter skills is they're able to adapt. If your curveball's thrown on the fire ground, a good company can recognize what's happening, adjust their tactics and move forward. And again, it's okay to make mistakes because we all make mistakes. The thing is like you guys just said, did you learn from it? Because if you're making the same mistake every fire, then we've got a problem. But, you make that one mistake, you learn from it, you tweak it, you go back. The next time you're presented with that situation, you should be able to handle it. But being able to think on the fly, a good company that trains on their skills, their core skills, is able to think on the fly when things just aren't adding up during that size of process. I like nothing more than, when I was in a dual company, I'd ride the engine sometimes, I'd ride the tower sometimes. There's nothing better than to roll up and just say, got to get a line of a door. And that's all you had to say. They're going to pull the correct line. They're going to have it flaked out. It's going to be charged. They're going to have their face pieces on. All that while I'm doing my 360. I come back, they're ready to go through the front door. Gears on, ready to go. That's the best feeling in the world. And that just solidifies in my mind that I trained, my crew has trained well, and they're ready to do their job. So I like seeing that.
Absolutely, 100%.
And part of that is, to touch one last thing on training, is the drill ground and your training session should be a safe place for people to screw up. The times you want people to make the mistakes and learn the hard ways is on the drill ground. People should feel comfortable enough in front of their peers and in front of their crew that they can try things out, that they can do different things without the fear of being chastised for making a mistake, because the best, speaking for me anyways, the best lessons, the most impactful ones for me have come from mistakes. Those are the ones that really stick with you. When you screw something up, that's it really ingrains itself in your brain, and you remember that mistake forever. Those are the ones that really stick with you. And when you make those mistakes, hopefully on the drill ground, then you can come back and say, hey, This is what happened. Well, okay, let's reverse engineer it. Why did that happen? How can we correct it? And when it makes people more comfortable, and it makes them more aggressive too, because if they feel comfortable with putting themselves all out there, then they're going to be putting out maximum effort as well too. And that's when you expose those flaws, and like you said, being able to adapt on the fly. Well, the more things go wrong in training, the more that's when you recognize those things. So you're putting more slides in your slide tray, so you're more likely to be able to catch something going wrong, or to be able to come up with a contingency on the fly when you're presented with one of those errors. Coupling gets hung up on a railing, or it's snagging on the treads, or whatever the million different situations that can occur during just a handline stretch. They're able to recognize, okay, we have a problem. What are the likely situations that could be occurring? Okay, now that I've recognized that, how do I fix it, or how do I adapt? And that's
and that all comes from that comfortability and creating that positive environment on the drill ground and making guys, you know, giving producing guys that are heads up and able to readjust and overcome the different issues that are bound to occur.
I agree with you, Nick, and it's the one thing I do, you know, I enjoy training and I think it's invaluable, but the one thing that training cannot recreate is a work and fire. And I'll give you a quick story where I made a mistake and I had to address myself. And it was very recently, it was beginning of February. We had a pretty good first due work and fire. And we had a lot of fire shown on the first floor. It was the middle of the row, ordinary. And my Nosman, who was my probie, he's getting ready to be done his probation. He got the line off like nothing. It was great. He did a great job getting the line off. And what happened was, he had got a coupling, was behind a car, but it was no big deal, and the car ended up moving. The guy was trying to get his car out of the way because of the fire, and it got caught on the tire where we got to move. But there was so much fire coming out of the front door that he was kind of like had his blinders on, and I kind of got in his ass a little bit, and I realized because he was like taking his time getting his stuff on, and I realized me getting in his ass a little bit was not the way to mitigate the situation. I had to like get down and like, dude, relax, we got this. You know, it's where in a training situation, you know, maybe getting his ass a little bit, he'll get motivated. But seeing that fire, it changed everything for him. And, you know, calmly talking to him was like a light switch and he was ready to go. So, you know, again, as a company officer, you got to adjust on the fly just as much as the firefighter. And, you know, everybody's different. Every personality is different. Every person is different. And, you know, he was able to, you know, get himself squared away and, you know, get rocking and rolling. So, you know, again, training can't recreate that. It's only like at a fire you can unfortunately recreate that stuff. And, you know, God bless the working fire. We learn so much about people, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we'll, you know, we'll leave that as we're just about past the 1 hour mark. And, you know, people have very short attention spans, especially firemen. So we try and keep the show to about a 1 hour length. So,
all right.
We're not creating these massively long shows. As much as I would love to continue this conversation, and I'm sure we can fill the rest of the night with content.
I thought it was really like Howard Stern and we were taking callers and stuff.
Sometimes people do call in, but looks like we're not getting anybody chiming in tonight. So one of the last things that I want to touch on, and then I'll kick it to you guys for the final thoughts, is Bobby, you hit it exactly there, and the company officer has to be that calm in the storm. You know, they really are the ones that set the tone for the entire incident, and it could be, you know, we've all seen from one end of the spectrum to the other. In one of the classes I teach, I reference one of my first company officers, a guy we affectionately called Curly, and he was just the no matter what you rolled up on, no matter how much fire was showing on arrival, this guy would give a sized report like he was ordering a pizza. I mean, I remember I got to work with him on his last shift. He was working overtime with us, and we caught a first due job right behind the firehouse. Roll up.
Nice last shift. Good for him.
Yeah, it hit par for the course for him. I mean, if anybody would go out that way, it was this guy. He was always on the busiest company and caught a ton of fire and just had a tremendous reputation. I still think to this day he was one of the best engine company officers I ever worked for. And I just remember facing forward, you know, looking out the front windshield, watching him. And we're rolling up, and fire's blowing out the top floor of a three family. And you know, he just picks up with me, just grabs the radio, and nonchalantly gives his size up report, and just tosses the mic down. And he just hops off the truck like a gentleman, and he's walking over as he's just adjusting his pack. And I just looked at him, and I go, man, that's a guy that's comfortable in what he's doing and knows what he's doing. And it just made me feel so at ease, and that we just went and did our job like it was. Like true professionals, you know, it's amazing the power that the company officer, or, you know, for us, it's the shift commander, that their tempo and their command presence and their demeanor, it really sets the tone and has a trickle down effect. So it's so important for the company officer to really maintain their cool and be that, that's,
that steady, calm voice, and despite what's happening around them, because it's Tom is contagious.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
So, I'll kick it to you guys for the final thoughts. Bobby, anything else you wanted to say to wrap up the show?
No, I appreciate you guys having me, and to everybody who tuned in, I appreciate you guys tuning in, giving up an hour of your evening, and to all my followers, I appreciate your support, and just keep trying to be the best you can be, and it starts with knowledge. Knowledge is power. Consistency is key, and try to learn building construction, because that's my pet peeve, and I can't, say enough about it. It'll make or break you and make you like an all-star. So stay safe out there and be aggressive.
Awesome. All right. If you don't already, you'll follow Bobby on Instagram at Ecker Fire Tactics page. He does a Tactics Tuesday.
I'll give you, it's Ecker underscore 335. It's a Ecker underscore E-C-K-E-R-T underscore 335. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate that.
So if you're on Instagram, follow Bobby's page. A lot of great content, some tremendous posts, and every Tuesday he does it, Tactical Tuesday, where he puts a training post on a particular topic. And apparently he's got some big news to announce tomorrow, so I'll be awaiting everybody else to find out what that is. And, Bobby, thank you very much for having us on. And, Dave, I will keep you for your final thoughts and to close out the show.
Yeah, again, Bobby, thank you for coming and giving us that perspective and great stuff. And always pass on to the younger guys that are looking to become officers and pass on your experiences. Not only as a fire on the fire side, but also on the administration side. It's one of the things that we really don't give our guys enough information on. So I appreciate you coming on here and giving us some good information and that's pretty much all I got. So again, thanks for showing up, and this particular radio show will be on Fire Engineering, their site for the talk radio. It'll also be on iTunes. So most of the time, the people may not call in, but they definitely listen to the show, later on when they're driving around in their car. So don't worry, your words will be heard.
When I'm in and out, don't crash. I'm not having a seizure or anything. I'm okay.
All right. Have a good rest of your day.
All right,
be safe out there. Okay.
All right, take care, guys.
Thank you. See you.
All right.